I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Here we go, 6:13, Tuesday morning, October 22nd. The cool weather we had last week was a little unseasonable, so we're back more to the regular seasonable stuff. Bone dry, highs in 80, 82 range until next Wednesday, and that's what we got. So there you go. No real cold weather coming in, as far as I understand, from Chris Franklin, WWL chief meteorologist. And he also said that he was officially declaring a hurricane season over, that we're done, which means I'm going to Home Depot later on and get some plywood. Just kidding. Howard Gleckman joins us now, the senior fellow in the Tax Policy Center, to talk about the tax plans of both Kamala Harris and Donald Trump. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Morning, Tommy. How are you doing?
I'm okay. You know, I was asking people before we came on, really, while we're going to have a serious conversation here, and we need to give the context, all of this depends on Congress and so forth, but I wonder if people are voting on personality or policy. Is there any research as to that, or do you know, Howard?
So I think the Trump voters are largely voting on personality. Mm-hmm. They love Donald Trump. Doesn't really matter what policies he espouses. The Harris people, I think, also are to some degree voting on personality. They're voting on Trump's personality.
Anti, right?
Right, that's right. This election, more than anything else, is really about Donald Trump. Do you want Donald Trump to be president or not? You know, Harris is a much smaller personality, and it sort of shows in the campaign. You know, we'll see whether or not her policy proposals, which are really quite extensive. You know, it's interesting. For a long time, she's been criticized for having no policy. She's actually proposed a lot of stuff. We'll see whether a lot it's caught on, whether voters have paid any attention or whether they like what she has to say. We'll see.
Well, that's the politics part of it. Let's talk the policy part of it. It can be some complicated stuff. So, Howard, I'm just going to stand back, and if I have any questions that I think the audience would have, I'll jump in as you compare and contrast Harris and Trump on their tax policy.
Sure. So they both proposed a lot of stuff. And you know, it's campaign season. That's what you do if you're a politician.
You promise people stuff,
right? And they're both doing it sort of on steroids. More recently, Trump has been doing it more than she has, but they both got a lot of proposals. So to give you some kind of high-level differences between them, Harris is proposing things like extending and expanding the child tax credit, which is for low and moderate income families with kids. She's proposed expanding the earned income tax credit, which is another thing for low and moderate income working families. She's said that she is going to extend the provisions of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, that big 2017 tax bill, but only for people making $400,000 or less. People making more than $400,000 and corporations would pay more in taxes than they do today. So that's basically where Harris is going. Okay. Trump is proposing a wide range of very targeted tax breaks for all kinds of people. You know, he said he's going to exempt tip income from tax. Harris followed him in that one. He said he's going to exempt Social Security benefits from tax. The other day he was on the stump and he said he'd consider exempting income earned by first responders, military personnel, and veterans. That's 22 million people. He'd exempt their income from tax. He's also said he's going to cut the corporate tax rate to 20%, maybe to 15% for some corporations. All of that would probably cost $8 or $9 trillion over the next 10 years. It's an amazingly big number. He says he'd pay for it by repealing the energy provisions, the green energy provisions of the Inflation Reduction Act. You know, those are the tax credits for buying electric vehicles, stuff like that. That would save about $700 billion. So that'd get him about 10% of the cost.
$700 billion out of $8 or $9 trillion, or $7 or $8 trillion?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. Yeah, so it's about 10%. It's less than 10%, covered less than 10% of the cost. The other thing he would do, of course, is he says he's going to increase tariffs. Now, every time he's on the stump, he talks a different number. Sometimes he says he'd increase the tariffs by 10%, sometimes 20%. The other day on the stump he said 400%, 500%, 1,000%, doesn't make any difference. So we don't really know exactly what his tariff proposal is, but my colleagues at the Tax Policy Center modeled a proposal that would be a 10% worldwide tariff, a 10% tariff on every product that the United States imports, plus a 60% tariff on Chinese imports. And we estimated that that would raise about $2.8 trillion. So you add the $2.8 trillion and the $700 billion, and you get about $3.5 trillion. You're paying for 35 or 40% of what Trump is proposing. The question is, where's the rest of the money going to come from? Mm-hmm. Harris, on the other hand, is proposing probably a net increase in the debt of about $3 or $4 trillion. So it's still a huge amount of money, but compared to Trump, it's pretty modest.
So bottom line, we got Harris at 3 to 4, according to Tax Policy Center. Harris's plans would increase the debt, $3 to $4 trillion. Trump, we're at what number?
$6 or $7 trillion.
Okay, pretty soon you're talking about real money, huh, Howard?
You're talking about real money, yeah. You know, the interesting thing is, I remember when I was on with you a few weeks ago, we were talking about this, and you asked about the budget deficit. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, nobody cares.
Nope.
You know, no politician is talking about it. The numbers just keep going up and up. And it's an interesting thing because people were so sensitive about interest rates a year or so ago because rates were so high. They were seeing it in car loans. They were seeing it in mortgage loans. And people were freaking out, and they're still mad about it. You know, both of these candidates have this package of proposals that are probably going to make interest rates higher again. Trump higher than Harris, but both of them would probably raise interest rates again. And nobody seems to notice. Everybody says, that's cool, I want to get my tax cut, so I don't really care about the rest of that stuff.
Have you seen, and I don't mean to delve into politics so much here, Howard, because I know you're a tax guy, but have you seen the showering of no taxes on this, no taxes on that from candidates like we have this campaign season? It just seems like crazy. Now you're talking about, if you're a public service employee?
If you're a first responder.
No taxes on your income at all.
Right, no taxes on your income at all. Yep. Wow. Military personnel and veterans. There's 18 million, 19 million veterans out there, and he'd exempt their income from tax.
Wait, so if you a know, veteran, hang on a second. So he's saying that if a veteran is making $300,000 a year or $400,000 a year and has gone on and gotten their life just zooming, they're not going to pay any taxes? That's what he's saying?
That's what he's saying, yeah. Okay. So you think about a guy like J.D. Vance, who was a veteran, served in the Marines, and then came out of the Marines and went to work for a private equity company. I don't know what he made, but it's, you know, probably north of what you were saying. You know, hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. Trump says, I'm going to exempt that from tax, from income tax. So, we don't know what the proposal is. He just said, yeah, I think about that. Somebody asked him about it. He said, yeah, it sounds like a good idea. So you're just getting people throwing around ideas. You know, when I was in high school, which is a long time ago, we used to talk about people running for class president by promising to put Coca-Cola in the water coolers.
Yep.
And that's kind of what they're doing now. They're just promising anything to anybody because they're trying to get votes.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. Talking to Howard Gleckman, senior fellow in the Tax Policy Center, which is odd to me, is that normally, you know, people talk about wanting their country back. Some Republicans want their party back because back in the day, Republicans weren't as concerned with social issues as they were with fiscal issues and debt and deficit and government spending and responsible taxation, et cetera. And now you're talking about the Republican candidate promising stuff that would increase the debt $6 to $7 trillion. The Democratic candidate promising stuff that would increase the debt and deficit $3 to $4 trillion. At no point is anybody talking about this mountain that's getting ready to tip over. We're going to reach a tipping point on this. Nobody cares. And there's going to be a day of reckoning. We'll drill down. We come back. 621 Traffic.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Traffic Now, WWL.
From Acadian Windows and Hurricane Shutters, WWL Traffic Center, I'm Courtney P. Bonnie Carey Spillway, La Place to Kenner do have light delay. As you enter the Spillway Bridge, eases pretty quickly. I-10 East Kenner to downtown New Orleans have light congestion around Veterans. Traffic remains clear to downtown from there. I-10 West New Orleans East to downtown, a slowdown begins in the Morrison Curve. Very heavy over to the high rise, have a stalled vehicle there. Downtown Elevated and the flyover running at speed. Crescent City Connection wide open in both directions. Huey P. Long in the Causeway, no delays there. I-55 north and southbound free and clear. No delays on I-12. I-59 is delay free. Traffic is sponsored by Thibodaux Regional Health System.
626, Tommy Tucker, WWL, on this Tuesday morning, starting off with Howard Gleckman, Senior Fellow in a Tax Policy Center, comparing and contrasting Harris's and Trump's tax plans. Harris's, they estimate, would cost $3 to $4 trillion, Trump's $6 to $7 trillion. Somebody texted in and said, stop foreign aid. That would balance the budget. Well, let me just give you an idea that in 2023, the United States spent $63 billion on foreign aid. A trillion, just so you know, is $1,000 billion. So there you go. Howard, somebody else texted in about closing the border would save trillions. Your response to that would be what?
So closing the border is going to mean that there are not going to be enough workers to do health care, to do construction, to do restaurants. That's not going to save money. That's going to cost money. That's going to slow the economy, and it's going to end up costing the U.S. economy a lot more money. The other thing is, if you close the border, a lot of those people who cross the border pay into Social Security and Medicare. They never collect. So actually, immigrants make the Social Security system stronger, not weaker. So if what you care about is the U.S. economy, closing the border is not a great idea. Now, making the border rational and not having, you know, hundreds of thousands of people crossing, you know, with no system for figuring out how many should stay here and how many shouldn't, that's a different story. But if what you're talking about is closing the border entirely and talking about what Trump is talking about, which is deporting 20 million people, that's not good for the economy or the budget deficit. That's actually bad.
See, I think, and what happens, Howard, is people throw everything in the same bucket and they don't realize that they got different buckets. So you can have a debate about immigration and border security, but you can't necessarily tie that into the economy and presume that 1 + 1 = 5, right?
No, that's right. That's exactly right. You know, what you were talking about before is really interesting. You know, Republicans before Trump, you know, it was pretty easy to understand what Republican economic policy was. It was low taxes, it was less regulation, it was free trade, and it was actually pro-immigration. You know, now with Trump, all of that is flipped. You know, Trump wants low taxes, but not low tax rates necessarily. He's looking for special interest tax breaks for specific constituencies so he can get elected. He's now against free trade. You know, regulation is interesting. He wants to reduce some regulation. He's going to put Elon Musk in charge of that. But he also wants to increase some regulation. So it's hard to quite understand where Trump fits in the traditional Republican Party, but it's not the kind of Republican I used to know. Harris, on the other hand, is a very kind of standard Democrat. She's sort of, you know, interchangeable with every Democrat over the last 40 years, with maybe the exception of Bill Clinton, who was more moderate. But she's a left-of-center, kind of standard pro-government Democrat.
I don't care who sleeps with who, but I'm looking at this national debt clock at $35 trillion and rapidly increasing. Quick word about tariffs, Howard, if you would. Who pays for tariffs?
American consumers pay for tariffs. End of story. It's not China. It's not foreign governments. It's American consumers. Tariffs are collected by American businesses that import companies, and they pass almost all of it on to their consumers. We have evidence of this. We've seen it when Barack Obama imposed tariffs. We saw it when Trump imposed tariffs in his first term. We've known this for 400 years. When you raise tariffs, consumers pay the tariff, and that's going to, again, increase prices. Doesn't seem like that's something people want.
Thank you, Howard. Appreciate your time, as always. Senior Fellow at the Tax Policy Center. We'll talk with Ted Ross when we come back. Bank rate Senior Industry Analyst. 83% of holiday travelers changing plans because of inflation. What about you? 504-260-1870. Has inflation caused you to change your holiday travel plans? I never go anywhere, so it doesn't really bother me. WWL First News Time, 6:30. 6:45, quarter till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Ted Rossman, our friend, Bankrate Senior Industry Analyst. 6:45, quarter till 7. Tell me what you've... Good morning, Ted, first of all, and welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Tell me what you've found about, what Bankrate has found about holiday travel and inflation.
83% of holiday travelers are making adjustments because of inflation. People are doing things like traveling for fewer days, picking cheaper, accommodations and driving instead of flying. In other words, they still want to go on the trip, but they're cutting corners to save money.
Have you seen the movie Four Christmases?
Yes, I have.
So I'm just wondering, as I saw this story, I was wondering about travel. Is it travel to vacation destinations? Is it travel to over the woods and through the hills and all that crap to grandma's house?
It's all the above. I would theorize that a lot of it is the classic home for the holidays, and it's one of the reasons why I believe younger adults face a larger cost burden. We see that Gen Zers and millennials are more stressed about the cost of holiday travel, and that's likely because those 20 and 30-somethings are the ones who are going home to mom and dad's or grandma and grandpa's, and maybe they're bringing their own kids in tow. A lot of times that holiday travel burden falls on the younger adults.
So when it comes to the budget that they have, I guess I'm thinking if they're going home to see mom and dad, or if my kid comes home to see me, they stay at home. They don't, other than gas to drive or airfare, I don't know what they would have to spend. Where does that fit in all of this?
Yeah, these are averages that are blending everything. So different household sizes, different types of trips. For those who are flying for Thanksgiving or Christmas, the average per household is about $1,000. Again, though, that could be, you know, larger families bumping up some of the cost. Same thing for hotels and short-term rentals. For those staying in one for Thanksgiving or for those staying in one around Christmas and New Year's, that too is around $1,000 on average per family. So if you're doing all four, it's an average of about $4,000. Now, you're right, not everybody is spending that much. Actually, surprisingly few people are flying for the holidays. It's only about 1 in 10. But those who are often spending a lot. It's kind of just one more thing. You know, that's one of the key findings here, is that it's not just travel prices that are high. Travel prices have actually stabilized or even come down in some cases, but it's everything else. It's like this is one more thing on top of higher housing costs and higher grocery bills and higher everything bills. And that's really why inflation is straining people. It's that cumulative effect.
And presents, right? You got to get presents.
Yep, 1 in 3 holiday shoppers are making changes because of inflation. So I thought that was notable, that the cutbacks are more clear on travel. Maybe we are starting to hit the end of this revenge travel thing. You know, it surprised me ever since the pandemic. I understood 2022 was going to be a huge year for travel and things reopening. Last year topped it, though, according to the TSA checkpoint numbers. This year is topping it again. We don't normally see this when people are worried about the economy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even though a lot of the economic data has been pretty good, sentiment has been bad the past several years. Inflation's been straining people, and yet they've still been spending robustly on discretionary things like travel and dining and concert tickets. And I would attribute a lot of that to this you only live once thing that developed during and after the pandemic. But maybe we're starting to find our limit here, because travel demand has not been as strong the past few months as it was in the past few years.
You only live once, Ted, but it's going to seem a lot longer when you're trying to pay off that credit card. Am I right?
And that is leading to some adjustments. Yeah, I mean, the fact that credit card balances are at record highs, credit card rates are still close to record highs, even though they've come down a little bit. A lot of people have dipped into savings. Now, maybe what seemed like a good idea a year or two ago now is maybe feeling like a bit of a splurge too far. People do still want to go on the trip, but like I said, they're making changes that, you know, almost everybody is making some sort of change owing to inflation. And it's not just this kind of blank check for travel anymore, like I'm going to spend whatever it takes to go wherever I want to go. It's like, I still want to go, but I'm willing to cut back here and there and save a little money.
I got some more inflation questions for you when we come back, Ted. Also, I want to talk about the reactive nature of the airline industry. And, you know, if they don't sell a seat, that's money lost forever, right? Like an empty seat at a concert. So I just wonder how much less demand on air travel means that prices come down. But then if people start chasing those seats, do the prices go up again? 6:50, 10 till 7, traffic now, WWL. 6:55 and a half. Tommy Tucker, WWL, Tuesday morning, October 22nd. Beautiful sunrise. Got some cotton candy clouds off on the horizon. Ted Rossman, our guest, Bankrate senior industry analyst, talking about holiday travel and the effects of inflation on that. More than 4 in 5 holiday travelers are changing their plans due to inflation, according to Bankrate. How reactive is the airline industry, Ted, when it comes to demand? Because I guess I'm thinking from the business standpoint, if I have a flight and I got an empty seat on it, that's money I'll never get back. And I guess you could factor in weight and fuel and all that stuff. But do airlines tend to drop prices for seats that aren't booked? But then if people start chasing those, is it like a dog chasing its tail where the prices go up again?
They've been behind the curve a little bit. They were slow to ramp back up when the post-pandemic travel boom happened. So they were behind in 2021 and 22, and that led to a lot of operational disruptions. Like, you know, flights were delayed or canceled because the crew and the equipment weren't there. That's gotten better, but now they've actually oversupplied a little bit, and that's been a drag on profitability. That's something that airlines have been talking about on recent earnings calls, that they've actually been trying to cut back some of their supply a little bit and better calibrate it with demand, because demand's been good, but it started to tail off. So it's always a bit of a delicate balance. Around the holidays, though, I expect full planes, and I would not expect a last-minute deal for holiday travel. For a busy period like that, it's better to book sooner, not later. It's already pretty late for Thanksgiving travel bookings. Even for Christmas, it's getting late. I would say jump on that as soon as you can.
Let me ask you about talk about inflation, generally speaking, if I may. You know, I see these commercials on television, and bear with me if you can, while I lay a foundation here, Ted. You know, you see beautiful actresses or actors on TV, depending on whatever, and it's like, man, I wish I could date them or whatever it is. And then you realize, well, that's never going to happen. It's just TV, right? It's fiction. But when it comes to commercials and products, I think people sometimes lose sight of the fact that not everybody can afford everything, and that explains the massive credit card debt. And I just wonder how people buying things that they can't afford leads to inflation, and if people would just kind of live within their means, how that might be a problem that would take care of itself. Thoughts?
What's been so difficult about inflation is that it's hit lower income people the hardest. You know, people that have less slack they can cut from their budget. These are not necessarily people who are going on expensive vacations or, you know, spending a lot on discretionary items, but it's more just the everyday. You know, this has highlighted a lot of inequalities in the economy where, you know, inflation's been an annoyance for everybody, but it's been more of an inconvenience for upper income households and really more of a crisis for lower income. When people get into credit card debt, surprisingly, it tends to be practical causes. Emergency expenses are number one. So that's your unexpected car repair or medical bill or something like that. And then second place is day-to-day expenses. That comes in well ahead of vacations and discretionary spending. It's kind of surprising.
I guess I'm wondering about people living beyond their means, because I see so many, you know, cars now being financed for 10 or 12 years, which to me is just crazy, but maybe I'm old school. And I just wonder if really, I don't know. It just seems like if you're financing a car for 10 years, you're going to be putting more into repairs halfway through while you're still paying for the car. That doesn't seem like a good, stable plan. Thoughts?
Those longer-term car loans are a big issue. Yeah, I mean, we're seeing more and more people financing those for 7 years or longer. That costs you a ton of money in interest. It can keep you underwater on the loan for a while. I would try to finance for no more than 4 or 5 years if you can.
And any need for regulation on that, or what do you think? Just let the market decide?
It may be one of those market will bear kind of things. You know, what's tricky is that the longer you go, the more affordable the monthly payment. Mm-hmm. So that sounds good to people, but it's that total interest expense that really gets you.
And repairing it while you're still paying for it. Thank you.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories. The unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.